Next item on the agenda, Dr. Bob Orth. Annual update on the status of submerged aquatic vegetation areas and the update on propeller scar project. We don't have any more propeller scars, do we?
I'm not going to tell you. Not yet.
Figured.
Okay, good afternoon. I've got four projects to review with you based on the support that you've given the program and the concern with regard to some of the egress. So during this presentation, I'm going to cover four topics. One is the seagrass restoration work that we've been doing at the coastal bays and its relationship to the set-aside areas that you have given to VIMS and UVA in South Bay and the Hog Island Bay. I want to be giving you an update on the propeller scarring project, which you funded for the last couple years, an update on the Chincoteague Bay SAV Sanctuary, which I did not do last year because we did not have photography for the year before, and a status on the Chesapeake Bay eelgrass populations. So I'm going to cover each topic one at a time. Okay, the seagrass restoration in Virginia's... Oh, by the way, can I turn the lights off? Because some of these slides may be a little bit lighter.
Kathy.
Great, thank you. Okay, first project is the restoration work that we're doing in Virginia's coastal lagoons. The goal has been the reestablishment of eelgrass to the lagoons, which has supported eelgrass prior to 1933. The big August 33 storm coupled to a pandemic decline to basically wiped out all the eelgrass and the scallops that were associated with it. We're looking at restoring eelgrass and those ecosystem services that were supported by eelgrass. Our work is occurring in four bays: South Bay, Cobb Bay, Spider Crab Bay, and Hog Island Bay. These were the strongholds of eelgrass back in the late 20s and up until 33. A simple timeline of what's been going on over there. Between 1997 and 2000, we've been doing plantings with small test plots and some seed experiments in South Bay to see whether these areas would support grass. They have. In 2001, this group approved a set-aside in South Bay for 5 years of 362 acres for us to continue the large-scale, or start the large-scale restoration. Between 2001 and 2006, not only did we do more test plots in some of the other bays, but we started the large-scale seeding, did some seed planter tests in some of these bays. Again, in South Cobb, Spider Crab, and Hog Island Bays. In 2006, the set-aside for South Bay was renewed for 5 years, and you gave us an additional 366 acres, and you also gave us a 507-acre set-aside in Hog Island Bay for 5 years to do the seagrass work to see whether we could get grasses back to that bay. Since about 1998, we have placed seeds in roughly 156 acres so far to date. We're working primarily with seeds rather than adult plants. And so through this time period, we started the large-scale stuff in 2001 and been ramping up our efforts each year and adding more seeds to each of these bays as they've been more successful. Quickly, in 2003, again, what you're looking at is an aerial photograph taken at about 12,000 feet. You're looking down through the belly of a plane, and I'll be showing you throughout my talk some of these pictures from our aerial monitoring assessment. Again, these are from photography that is taken at 12,000 feet. And the scale bar here will tell you the distance that you're looking at in these features. This is Wreck Island. This is the south, generally the area of the South Bay set aside. These black squares are some of the seagrass plots that we put in 2001 and 2002. Again, the shot was taken on November 11, 2003. This is the same area with a photograph taken in 2004, a year later, and you can see these plots have survived and have grown and gotten thicker. The one thing I want to have you watch is look at this feature here, which is in the shape of a W and a B. These are plants that were put out with seeds that ended up in the shape of a W and a B because we simply broadcast seeds and they fall kind of where they go and where the boat goes. But this feature is going to be really important in the next slide, the W and the B. Again, 2004, you see these shots, W and the B. This is 2007. This is a lower altitude shot, but basically this is the same area. This is essentially one dense continuous bed of eelgrass in South Bay from here to here. You can no longer see the W and the B because it's all one dense continuous eelgrass bed. This area is about 175 acres. This whole area is about 500 acres. What you can't see, although some of these areas are discernible, all these areas here are very small patches of eelgrass, and we anticipate that in 2008 we're going to see one big black blob, meaning that this is going to be one big, dense, continuous eelgrass bed. Not only that, but if you're familiar with South Bay, this goes way, way down, many miles behind the other barrier islands, and we are finding large numbers of patches several miles south of this site. So we're seeing pretty good successful spread naturally from the original established plots in here, the W and the B. So we're pretty excited about the success that we've seen in South Bay so far. Cobb Bay, four plots that we put in. These are one-acre plots, basically a couple hundred feet by a couple hundred feet, 2004. You can see this little feature here, which is an O and an O. That's how we put the seeds out in that particular year. This is 2007. Again, those four plots, all these little splotches in here are patches of eelgrass that have developed naturally from the spread of seeds produced by these four plots. And these circles that you see in the solid area here, again, are the areas here that we put out in 2003 that are continuing to survive. So the areas in Cobb Bay are doing quite well. Spider Crab Bay, 2007, this is the Gull Marshes. These little circles, again, are areas of eelgrass that we planted with seeds, simply broadcasting seeds in a circle. In 2003 through 2007, they're doing quite well. This is a big area of eelgrass that, again, has recovered or coming back from natural spread. We don't have as much plantings in Spider Crab Bay, but we're going to ramp up the efforts there. This is a very large public ground, so we don't have to worry about set-asides there. This is Hog Island Bay. This is the set-aside that you gave us NUVA last year. It's 508 acres. And last year, here's the design of the project that we had, in which we put 1.6 million seeds at about 21 acres spread out across the set-aside at these different depth levels, which are the different colorations of the slide. And we did it in two different densities of 100,000 and 50,000 seeds per acre. And again, that was done last year. The plants that we see from those plots are doing very well. And we've also discovered a large area of natural grass, actually, in this area, which was quite surprising, meaning that, you know, we're not sure where it's coming from. We're hoping to do the genetics. But bottom line is Hog Island Bay is doing quite well, too. So for the four bays, it's great. Quick summary of this project so far, 156 acres that we planted since 1998. That's just planting. The actual total area is going to be quite high because from the mapping efforts that we have in 2007, that's going to be in excess of about 1,000 acres of eelgrass that's supported in these coastal bays. Again, successful survival of all four bays that have historically supported eelgrass. We're seeing a lot of natural spread very rapidly. I mean, this has exceeded our expectations by a lot. And we're really pleased by how well it's surviving and spreading naturally. And this will come into play in the last part of my talk when we talk about what's going on with eelgrass in Chesapeake Bay. So that's the set-aside seagrass restoration effort in the seaside. We're just delighted by how well it's doing and maybe one of the largest seagrass restoration efforts that I know of anywhere in the world at present. Moving on to the propeller scarring project. This is an update from the previous years that we've made these presentations. The original work identified heavily scarred areas up here in Tangier and the Mobjack Pocosin area. These are the areas that had the most heavily scarred areas. We identified two areas to follow the recovery and subsequent scarring if it was occurring at two sites, one called the Pocosin site between the Pocosin River and the Back River, and an area that we call the Browns Bay site, but includes the area called the Guinea Marshes, all the way wrapping around into the south shore of the Severn River over here in the Mobjack Bay. One of the earlier slides that we showed you back when we made this earlier presentation, Browns Bay, Guinea Marsh area. Again, this is the Severn River. You're looking, again, straight down through the Belleville Plain in a mosaic of photographs. This is the grass, the dark splotches all the way through here, all the lines where the scars in these beds. And we have been monitoring those areas. And this is the graphic that we've been showing now for the last few years. Let me run you through the by year and the scar length. So we measured every single scar over this time frame and have been following those scars each successive year. So if you take, for example, in 1995, there were over 100,000 meters of scars in this one area, and they have been growing successfully through the years till you don't see them anymore. Well, that's how we follow the scars. So when we made this presentation, this is how we decided to display the data. And since we made that presentation and with the new regulations, between 2004 and 2005, the scarring has not in any way, shape, or form approached what we saw back in the early years. And although there were more scars here in 2006, and the total is a little higher than 2005, again, if you look at what's going on here, the number of new scars is not anything compared to what we saw in the previous years. That's Browns Bay. Again, where we saw those scars is essentially this general area here in the Guinea Marsh. This is, again, the York River, Guinea Marsh area here. Coast and Flats, again, the same design of the slide as I showed for the Browns Bay. Lots of grass in here, all the scars from the previous years. Again, the data that you want to concentrate with the update of 2006, there were about 3,500 meters of new scars for a total of 58, slight increase over 2005. But again, nothing compared to what we saw in the early years when scars were exceeding, 40,000 linear meters of scars. And let me just say one thing. The thing is that with these numbers, we are again continuing to see a fair amount of recovery soon after the scars are formed. So these beds, when they're healthy, do recover very rapidly from a scar. Again, where the scars occurred in the Pocosin Flats off these points of land. But again, as I pointed out, these are scars in 2006. We'll show you those data in 2008 because the update comes from aerial photographs taken each year. So it's a year later that we see the scars. And these are probably a set of boats leaving the hauling area that particular day. So our recommendations to you would we would like to continue the monitoring of the scars in 2007. It gives us, a kind of keeps our hands on the pulse of what's going on in these particular sites and also allows us to work with the watermen in these areas to let them know what we're seeing. I talk regularly with Nathan Dryden about what we're doing, and he calls me and I call him, so I think we've got a pretty good relationship there. And if you approve this project for another year, again, be here next year at this time and provide the update as I have had in the previous couple years. So that's the SCAR project. Let me move on to the Chincoteague Bay SAV Sanctuary. We again came to the commission where we noticed these features in this grass bed, which were the result of digging up clams using a modified oyster dredge, where the dredge was drawn around the beds in a very quick manner and uprooting the grass, leaving a little donut. The commission responded with a couple regulations, in one in 1998 that created the sanctuary, and in 2001 modified it by marking the areas. This is the marked area, the sanctuary, the original buffer, but the marking areas with signposts and day markers. Since 2001, we have seen no new scars in Chincoteague Bay. There have been no scars, and I would attribute that to a combination of perhaps, the people that monitor these areas, your patrol people. And again, I'm not sure how many people still work around. You may know if people are still working in that general area. But we and our photography have not seen any new scars in this area. Now, here's where some of the bad news begins. The downside, Chincoteague Bay, where all the grass spreads are. Here are the numbers from the increasing abundance of yellowgrass, again, from our aerial photography through 2004. Here are the 2006 numbers. Between 2004 and 2006, there has been a major downturn of seagrass abundance in Chincoteague Bay. It is really taking a hit, and it is a water quality issue that's now emerged in Chincoteague Bay, where we've lost well over half of the eelgrass in less than 2 years. There are many people that are concerned about it. There are a lot of other issues, but and I've just talked recently with the gentleman that runs the water quality monitoring program. The problem is that the nitrogen levels are increasing in Chincoteague, and this is not a good sign because this is what's fueling a lot of phytoplankton blooms that are decreasing in life, which are now affecting the seagrass. And this is a major, major concern. Having seen this and then how quickly it goes is really depressing. And again, we will continue to follow this. And there are people that are raising the flag about this particular concern in many different avenues, and we will continue to update you each year as it comes to play. Okay, last part of my talk, again, the Chesapeake Bay eelgrass status. Why I'm doing this is because this is a major area of concern for us at present. Now, let me step back a little bit and tell you something about where eelgrass was in the late 1950s and 60s. Again, this is our species that occurs in high salinity areas. This polygon, this color in green, represents all the areas in the bay where eelgrass was in the late 50s and early 60s, representing the maximum period, or the period in which we saw maximum distribution of eelgrass during this time period. Where we are today is this. This is what's left and where eelgrass occurs in the Chesapeake Bay in 2007. This occurred primarily in the late 60s and in the 70s with Tropical Storm Agnes, when that storm basically devastated many resources, one of which was eelgrass, and shifted the eelgrass distribution from up bay to down bay and literally out of every major trib in the Chesapeake Bay. And unfortunately, we have seen almost no or very little recovery of eelgrass in this portion since the 1970s. And that is another area of concern. But now what I'm going to do is focus on what's going on here, and this is why we're trying to raise the flag and let people know what's going on. Okay, here is the eelgrass abundance in this zone from 1984 through 2006, based on our aerial survey, which we map all grass beds every year. This is eelgrass abundance from 1984 in hectares. In hectares is 2.47 acres and a hectare. So just, you know, keep that in mind when you look at this figure. But we were very, very impressed by the rapid increase in eelgrass through about 1993. But since that time, this is what's been going on. And the present distribution in 2006 now represents less than half of what we had during the peak period, which was in 1993. This is a very depressing sign, and we are really concerned. We're working up a lot of the water quality data. And let me just show you quickly. This is just one site. This is Goodwin Island of the York River, where you've got a lot of eelgrass here. It's no longer here. Quite a bit difference from that time period. Allen's Island in this particular area here, no longer here. Pretty bad. The water quality is decreasing. And these are data from the main stem water quality monitoring stations, in which we summarize the data from 28 stations from the main stem bay for the eelgrass growing season, which is March to November. So these are the mean water quality SECI readings. So the higher the number, the clearer the water. The lower the number, the worse the water quality. And this is the depressing thing that's going on right now between 1984 and 2006, where we saw in 84 a SECI reading of about 1.8. It's now about 1.2. So the water clarity in the Chesapeake Bay, based on the water quality main stem data, is decreasing a lot.
Bob, can you go back to that last slide?
I noticed an upward trend in clarity, you know, around 99, 2000, then a down. What do you got any idea as to what happened there?
If you recall from the time period, 1999 through 2002, were relatively dry years.
Okay.
Again, we're working up a lot of the data. We're really cautious right now in how we present these data because we're trying to correlate some other things. But historically, a number of things have happened. 1993, 94, here were 2 years of back-to-back higher than average water quality, a higher flow from the Susquehanna, Potomac, and James. These 4 years, actually 1999 through here, represent four successive years of below or average flow. 2003, if you remember, we had one of the wettest years on record, 70 inches of rain that year, plus Isabel. And boom. And so that we took a hit. But it's this general, we have these insults, but it's the overall general change in water clarity that is really beginning to concern us. And when you look at the general distributional patterns of eelgrass, we're losing eelgrass in the deeper areas of the beds. It's the first thing to go when you lose water clarity. And so this is really bothering us quite a bit, and we're trying to work up this and let people know what we're seeing. So in quick summary, eelgrass has been lost in over half of its distributional range since the 60s, with little or no recovery in that upper half of the polyon that I showed you. In the remaining areas, over half of the eelgrass has disappeared since the mid-90s, with most of the loss coming from the deeper portions of the beds. The loss of the eelgrass is in deeper locations, consistent with the water quality changes that we're seeing, the water quality hypothesis. There are other stresses that are occurring, so we can't ignore the fact that hurricanes are increasing in frequency. The bay is warming up, and remember, eelgrass is a cool temperate species, so we are concerned that if you have warmer summers, which like we had in 2005, we may see continuing insults from there. And Kalanos rays, which have been around for a while, but because there's less eelgrass around, their presence may have an impact on the remaining populations and hinder the spread of the plants the way they normally spread, which is by seed. And lastly, if these trends continue, we've got some concerns that eelgrass could be gone for much of the Chesapeake Bay in the not-too-distant future. So we're alerting you to this fact. There are many ecosystem services that this plant provides to the Chesapeake Bay, and how this plays out, I think, is all going to be played out in the next few years, many few years. So with that, I will stop and answer any questions.
Do you ever give this presentation to the Water Board, or have you ever given it to the Water Board?
Well, no, these are all new data. I mean, the stuff on the trends, we've been watching very carefully. We've been trying to be cautious in what is going on and raising flags and alerting people, saying the sky's falling. We don't want that to happen. But over these trends that we showed you here are of major concern to us. And when we looked at the water quality data, that 20-year trend of water quality clarity decreasing from about 1.67 to 1.2, that is a big difference, and that's going to have a big impact, and that's something that's not going to change overnight. And obviously the data that we are working up will go to the appropriate people in the different agencies. I mean, this is all new stuff. We're just working it up. We're trying to go through not just the water clarity data, but what's contributing to the changes in water clarity. Is it chlorophyll? Is it TSS? The concern right now is it looks like it might be chlorophyll that's contributing to that, and that's not good, because if it is, that's phytoplankton, which means that you may be seeing increase in nutrients. And, you know, if you talk about the oyster stuff and all that, this is a problem. So the bay is not getting clean. It's getting dirty.
Yep. Any questions, Dr. Worth? As usual, great job, Bob. Thank you so very much.
With respect to Dr. Worth's presentation, you'll find behind the appropriate tab a proposal that he submits to us annually at this time of year.
All that.
Staff is recommending that work continue. His work on the propeller scarring is the only way that we really have to monitor that and know that things are going right there or not. He's asking for the annual $20,000 award. I think the evaluation says we'd like to take that from the recreational fund. We want to change that. Actually, there's sufficient funds in both the commercial and recreational funds to split it half from one and half from the other. But we will need approval from the commission to do that.
And I think water quality affects certainly both sectors. That's a no-brainer. Matters before the commission for consideration. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Per staff recommendation, I would move that we approve funding for Dr. Ward's proposal, $10,000 coming from the recreational fund and $10,000 from the commercial fund.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Dr. McConaughey. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion? Yes.
I was just going to say,
I'm sorry,
I think he's doing great work, and this is a real bargain.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, a lot of other people, I do want to say, that have provided support. NOAA is a big supporter of our program. We get money from a lot of different sources, and it's a cohesive program that's funded from a variety of sources, and I definitely appreciate your support of this effort.
And we think it's a worthwhile project, definitely. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Do you have it? Robbins and Dr. McConaughey. I'm getting so I can read your mind. Thank you very much. Next item.